Shore Talk, the sound of yachting world.
I would never put that much money into it and not be an active part of the team.
I think it's Michael Bubba.
It's definitely a lot easier than driving a dragon compared an elephant to a race yacht.
It's not a revolution boat, it's just a lot of sense, it's a conventional boat.
And the guys were very, very nice to me and said, no, Mike, you drive.
Blisteringly quick, but staggeringly expensive, the TP52 class has exploded onto the scene. But at what cost? Well, the answer is around 2 million euros for the boat and another 1 million per year just to run it. TP52 racing is not cheap, but then again, if you're good enough to helm, where else would you be able to race head-to-head against Russell Coutts, Paul Kayard, Dean Barker and two kings? In this issue of Shore Talk, we meet up with Pinta owner Michael Ilbrook to find out what motivates an owner to spend 100 days a year and several million euros on one project. We also talk to design guru Rolf Frolic about why the TP52 class is such a success and what lies beyond. You might be surprised to hear what he has to say. But first, Michael Ilbrook, a man well known for his string of Pinta race boats and a man also well used to Grand Prix racing. I caught up with him at the TP52 finals in Ibiza.
The TP52s have sort of exploded onto the scene. What is it about the boat that makes it such an exciting and popular boat?
It's, first of all, it's fantastic to sail. Performance of the boat is great. That's number one. And also equally important is that the best sailors in the world are on these boats. And then for me personally, I really enjoy driving the boat and being around a professional team. I was really afraid before the season started that the professionals would just beat up on us, and that didn't happen. Obviously in the start and some other places, you know, they are definitely better than we are. But that is also very, very interesting. It was a very, very positive experience to be able to sail against the pros. And when you look at Peter de Ridder, he's doing a fantastic job now. The performance of the boat, you know, the top people in this, in the class, and I think the organization is very, I mean, it's fantastic, and next year looks very, very good. And I think it's next to the Far 40, I think it's the class. I've sailed Far 40, but TP52 is it's like comparing a Porsche Turbo against the Carrera GT, totally different animals.
It's interesting, I was going to ask you about the Far 40, because until very recently that's been the big playground for owners and professional crew. Do you think that this new class, the TP52 class, has taken a lot from the Far 40 and moved it on, or is this something completely new?
I don't think so. When you look at the recent Far 40 Worlds, I think they have way over 30 entrances, so I don't think it's going to take away from the Far 40. It's also, money-wise, the budget is completely different. The budget is completely different at TP52. I think the TP52 class can learn from the Far 40 class. It's the sail limitations and how to run race courses and events. I think the Far 40 class is doing a very, very good job at that. But I don't think that the TP52 is taken away from the Far 40 class. I don't think at all. Far 40 is still a very, very strong class.
One of the other things you mentioned was that you were concerned about racing against the big guys to start with. And I noticed that there's a Corinthian class. And I understand that the whole idea of the Corinthian class is starting to sort of evaporate a little bit now. Why is that?
Because the owner drivers do well. The owner drivers do well. But I still think we should have that. Obviously I understand that there are companies that put money into this and want to have professional drivers. Some of the owners also do like to do that. From like my dad would have never driven a boat. He would have he did what he that he would have never done what I do. I think it like the Worlds next year, our owner driver or amateur driver too, and I think that's right. I think that's right.
The TP52 Worlds.
Yeah. And in the US, as you know, it's only amateur driver.
That's where it came from originally, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's the TP52 came from the US, and the class still in the US is amateur driver. What would I prefer? I prefer to sail against the professionals. That's what I would prefer.
one might imagine if you look down the entry list of some of the names and you see Russell Coutts and you see some of the world's biggest names, and yet they're not at the front of the fleet. Is there anything that we can draw from that?
Well, I think in any class, I do believe that it's up to how steady your crew work is, how well prepared you are, how much time you put in to this. And I think even the best sailors in the world cannot just step on a boat and go. You know, you see the advantage of Mean Machine. I also think it's not only because they do a fantastic job sailing, but they are very well prepared, and they got the boat there where they wanted to have the boat. No? And we couldn't put that much time this year into this, so that's one of the reasons. So I'd have to say I'm very, very surprised. I would have never thought that we would do that well in the first year sailing against these big shots. Never.
That must be a huge boost to owners like yourselves and others who are putting a lot of money into the campaign, and then finding that when you do take the wheel, you're not being blown away by these big guys.
Yeah, we'll see what happens next year. I think there will be, you know, Russell is preparing a very good campaign, and I would have never done it like my dad did it. You know, he spent all the money on sailing, and then he was walking from the left side to the right side of the boat, and obviously that was how he enjoyed it. No? I'm not saying that is bad, but I would never put that much money into it and not be an active part of the team. And I had a bad conscience too in the beginning when we set up the campaign. I was like, John, do you guys can bear that I can, you know, you mentally, are you prepared for, you know, that I drive? And then the guys were very, very nice to me and said, no, Mike, you drive. And I did a lot of dragon racing the last 2 years, and that really helped me improve my driving. I'm a bit still weak on the starts, and leeward mark roundings are not perfect. But also today on the reaches, I'm not fearing anybody right now.
Now, on that subject, tell me about driving the boat. You said it's a very exciting boat to drive. I mean, is it the kind of boat that feels on the edge all the time? Is it intimidating to start with? How does it feel?
No, I think it's, first of all, to all the Far 40 owners or drivers, it's a lot easier than driving a Far 40.
Really?
And it's definitely a lot easier than driving a Dragon. I mean, that's clear. Because it compared an elephant to a race yacht. No, it's actually very well balanced.
Why don't you say it's easier than a Far 40?
I find it easier than a Far 40 because it's much more balanced, the boat, and it's a more modern boat too. You feel that. What is difficult though is because we have very small fins, so the boat, also in a big breeze, upwind kind of tends to stall. So you really have to find the right balance, and we're changing stuff to next year because we feel that we at times don't have enough rudder pressure on the rudder so that I can really feel the boat. No? But it's like I drove New Zealand 84 once, just for 10 minutes, and I was amazed how easy that was to drive, and it's the TP52 is like that.
So long as the trimmers are awake.
Yeah, that's obviously, it's not only in the driving, eh? That's clear.
Yeah.
It's the setup, it's the trimmers, it's the whole team. I mean, I'm just a little wheel in the whole thing.
There's an awful lot of money going into the boats. The boats cost, as I understand, a typical price would be €1 million for a boat, and maybe, I've been told, 750,000 to actually run it as a campaign.
Yes, that's about right.
Is it possible, with the kind of money that's going into this class, to have an arms race in terms of technology, or does the class already start there? The people who've got the money and got the crew and got the technology suddenly go to the front, but maybe we're already there.
I think if you have the most money and you don't have the right team together, or you have the right team together but can't form a team, or the right people together but can't form a team, don't put enough time on the water on it, and the chemistry is wrong on the boat, I don't think you are going to get anywhere. That's number one. Number two is, yes, I think we're getting a bit out of control. Like today on the offshore, you know, you can have for each wind angle, you can have a sail. And that, I think, is something that the class, the owners need to decide to maybe put a limit to. No? But right now we don't have a limit. But the figure is right. I think it's going to be right for next year as well. But for Pinta and us, I don't do it, sorry, half-ass. You do it right or you don't do it at all.
A view that's common throughout the fleet. From the front to the back, no one is here to make up the numbers. But there's something else that drives owners like Ilbrook to succeed in this class, and that's the chance of taking a big scalp. There's no question that big names like Coutts, Kayard, Barker and many others are targets for the top owner drivers. When they beat them, they feel justifiably proud. But how does Russell Coutts feel about being beaten by an owner driver?
I think it's great. Yeah, fantastic. I think it's great. It's good. You know, that's the great, one of the good things about our sport. You know, it's really not a lot of sports you can do that with. You know, don't forget, it's not just about, you know, about the driving. In fact, I'd say in fleet racing, personally, I think that, you know, as long as you've got a reasonable. As long as you've got a reasonable driver, the team is important, and you probably find that all of these drivers are getting coached pretty well by the pros on board the boat. You know, it's like the Far 40 drivers, you know, the good ones are those. I don't think there'd be much difference at all.
Training for success is clearly a big factor in TP52 racing, and the determination of owners and crew in the 23-boat fleet throughout the season has resulted in some of the closest racing on the big boat scene. But there's more to the success of this class than big bucks and hard work. So what is it that makes this boat so much more exciting than any other equivalent racing machine? Designer Rolf Frolik explains.
Let's say, okay, one thing is, of course, to make them relatively light. I mean, relatively light compared to what those boats were, let's say, 10 years ago. So they're 30-40% lighter than what they were before. They have, of course, slightly more sail area, but not a lot more, but more or less same sail area, but they're a lot lighter. And that's why the acceleration is so good. And then they have high stabilities, because they're quite wide boats, so the crew stability is quite high.
It's interesting that they're actually fairly conservative as well, in that they don't have, you haven't got a canard, haven't got a canting keel.
Yeah, but I think that's part of this attraction also, otherwise it would be a full development class. And now it's still a box rule where the boats are quite even, so the differences are not too big. I mean, the difference is that the people can see, that's like you see boats of last year doing well, you see some boats doing well in some conditions, some boats doing well, let's say, or in different conditions. And the potential, let's say, difference of the boats are very small, which I think makes it more attractive. It's a little bit, development class is very interesting, if you have the extreme options of canards and canting keels and everything, but then the speed differences get very big, and then the racing becomes a lot less interesting.
Yeah. Would it be fair to say that then, seems to be that this class is sort of, is all the best bits of the two extremes? You have the extreme development class of canting keels and all that kind of stuff at one end, and we've got the extremely intense one design competition in Far 40s and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And this is an amalgamation of the best bits.
Yeah, correct, it's the best bits, and then it's something new. There was a demand for it, was a vacuum, so there was a big hole somewhere, and that's why people jump on it. Because there was nothing else comparable anymore available for these owners. You get this combination of owners and sponsors, and it works very well. It works very well for both sides. For both sides, it makes it quite attractive.
Has it surprised you that this rule has come out almost by accident, out of something that had been, I hate to say dormant, it wasn't dormant, but it wasn't really taking off for a couple of years, yet suddenly, bang, it's...
Yeah, if Europe wouldn't have done it, the class would have died, clearly. And the only reason why it came up is that at that moment there was a real need for something, and there was nothing available, really. And this was the only option there was, just to make a... It was really, I would say, a very spontaneous decision, more or less guided by the King and the Spanish guys, very clearly.
Yeah. Is it fair to say the King was the catalyst in making it happen in Europe?
Yeah, the King was the catalyst for the start of this class, and of course he was, let's say, lobbied by other people too. He came out of this size of boats and there was nothing happening anymore, so he was aware of it, that if they wouldn't give it another start, this kind of competition would probably die in Europe. The discussion was to set up something new, which is difficult again, and or just scrap up something that exists, even if it's not perfect. Probably you would do the boat just for European or Mediterranean condition, whatever, you would have done a different boat, but you just pick up something that exists was probably a very good decision. Because that at least you don't need the lead times for it.
Do you think this provides given that we've had over 20 years since the IOR and the struggle to find a replacement rule or area for development boats has been incredibly difficult, obviously with IMS and blah, blah, blah. Do you think that this provides perhaps a template or a guide for Grand Prix racing of the future, or is it just a micro bubble in itself?
I think it's a micro bubble.
Do you? Why did you say that? I'm surprised to hear you say that, because you got GP42 is on its way, and I thought it might. I was expecting you to say, "Oh, it's going to trickle down, and yeah, we're going to have, you know, this is how it's going to be." But
no, I don't think so. It just you just have to look at the names that are involved in it, and the names of the guys that are involved in it, and that really, let's say, are in the class, let's say, important for the class. And those are 80% or 60% of those names exist already in different classes and different boats, and we're just looking for something new. I think this is what happens. And this kind of competition will have, let's say, peak in 2 years. And then, of course, it will not disappear, but it will just be less attractive for these guys. They will be on the hunt for something else. The group below it won't be the owner's group. That's the trouble with the Grand Prix 42. It's not a group where you get this kind of owners involved in it. You won't get the same guys involved in it, and there's not another group of guys that wants to go into it. It's very difficult to copy this kind of a thing, because I think it's very depending on the people involved. And I'm pretty sure that the Grand Prix 42 will take off, but it will never be comparable, and it only takes off again because in Spain there is nothing available to the smaller sponsor groups an involvement in the Grand Prix racing scene. And that's why that one is grouped, but it's for a different reason. That's not the reason for the TP52, but that's the reason for the GP42. If there wouldn't be, let's say, five Spanish sponsors probably interested next year, this class wouldn't exist. It's like the IMS 600. The same reason that the IMS 600 doesn't exist anymore, and there is a vacuum again to do this professional, let's say, project management with sponsor support for a lower budget. And that's where the need is. So not the reason, because the kind of competition and the kind of way the box rule works or whatever. So then if you go even smaller.
What about from a technology point of view and a boat point of view, though? Are there lessons there that are going to be learnt and translated further down to smaller boats? Is this the beginning of a racing boat revolution, perhaps?
No. Yeah, it's not a revolution boat, it's just, in a lot of sense, it's a conventional boat. There's nothing revolutionary about it.
Box rules seem to be working left, right and centre, and everybody seems to be in denial about whether this is the future. I mean, Volvo 70,
TP52. It's clearly the future. Yeah. There's no need for any other thing. It's the only need for handicaps, just basically for the production boat. I mean, there's a need for it, because there are that many sailboats.
I knew you'd agree with me at some stage. Yeah.
No, I agree with you. There's a need for it. There's a big need for it. But let's say it's a very different level.
Do you think Grand Prix racing, or the Grand Prix proper racer style, has evolved so far over the last 20 years that we've actually gone beyond the point at which you can realistically have a rule that goes from 25 foot to maxi? Yeah. We've gone beyond that.
Yeah. I think it's, again, there is no need for it. There is need for certain things that develops because of, let's say, racers' activities, sponsors that are pushing events or whatever. And that's the same reason why you have a Volvo 70, why you have an Open 60, and why you have a TP. There's a need for that kind of a boat. And it's they have no similarities. The only similarity they have is that there was a need for it, for the class, which is good.
Good indeed. Good for the owners, good for the crew, and good for the sport. The bottom line is that the TP52 was kick-started into life in Europe thanks to royal support from the King of Spain. But the class has snowballed since then. It's expensive, intensive, and in many people's eyes, the biggest thing this side of the America's Cup. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Let us know what you think. Email us at yachtingworld@ipcmedia.com and keep an eye on our website for future broadcasts, www.yachtingworld.com.
Shore Talk is an Airwaves media production for Yachting World.